Hello, this is Julia McCutcheon, founder and creative director of the International Association of Conscious and Creative Writers at IACCW.com. And a very warm welcome to what I know is going to be an intriguing conversation with my special guest, Tom Evans, who is going to be speaking to us shortly about the art and science of lightbulb moments for authors. Now, I'm sure that many writers will be interested to know how to experience these aha moments on demand, which would be absolutely perfect when you are working on your latest writing project. So let me just give you a little bit of information about Tom, and then we're going to dive straight into our topic. Now, Tom is the author of 5 books, including one that's called The Art and Science of Lightbulb Moments. And he specializes in teaching authors, creatives, and entrepreneurs how to tap into their creative muse and how to make sure ideas end up happening. And you can read all about Tom and his work on his website at tomevans.co. That's C-O at the end. So a very warm welcome to you, Tom, and thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, it's my great pleasure, Julia. Hi there.
Hi. So let's just dive straight in and begin by asking you to define what you think and consider lightbulb moments to be, and also perhaps a little bit about your story of exploring and writing about these lightbulb moments.
Yeah, well, I guess the story kind of does tell it. I've always been an engineer and always been very entrepreneurial, and since as long as ago as I can remember, I've always had these amazing ideas that have just come in. Seemingly from nowhere, and then they've led to real world products and services. And and in my mid 40s, when I started writing, I had a light bulb moment that, as an engineer, wouldn't it be interesting to research the mechanisms that happen in the mind, and perhaps that don't happen in the mind, to generate these light bulb moments, and to see whether they're random or whether they can actually be encouraged to come in. And what I found was amazing, that there are loads of ways to better your odds of having lightbulb moments. And in fact, there's ways to get into the state of mind, or the state of minds, to be more specific, where lightbulb moments come in naturally.
Interesting. Now, you're already making an interesting point by using minds in the plural. That's an immediate question for me. Tell us more about the minds, then, that you're referring to.
Well, What my research uncovered is that we've got mind centers inside our bodies. We've got a gut mind and a heart mind, and they inform us greatly on the viability and validity of an idea. And I'm sure you, like me, have many times not trusted your gut and then regretted it later. And what's happened now is that the scientists have actually found out that our gut mind is full of neurons, and it acts about 5 seconds ahead of our conscious minds. Mm. And there's a dialogue that goes between them all the time. So the gut mind and the heart mind are, if you like, our internal quality assurance mechanisms that sometimes we overrule. But my research led me into the kind of Jungian space, where there's this idea that we've got a collective consciousness, and that all thoughts, all wisdom, all knowledge is stored past, present, and future in something called collective. Now, obviously, quantum physicists are calling it things like the Akashic field, or the I field, or the zero point field, and there's some nice convergence going on at the moment between mystical thinking and scientific thinking, which is very healthy. And what it looks like is that we sit in time, and we can have memories of the past, and they all seem quite logical. That what looks like these lightbulb moments are almost like future memories that we pick up and bring back to the present. So, for example, Leonardo da Vinci drawing the helicopter and the parachute, perhaps what he was doing was picking up sort of memories from the future. And if you get into a certain state of mind, which is a kind of meditative space, and you switch your conscious mind, your internal dialogue off, you can tune into these memories. And if you think about it, the person that you're most closely resonated with in the concept of a super consciousness is yourself a few minutes, a few days, a few months, or a few years from now.
Interesting. Very interesting. And I resonate with what you're saying exactly. Perhaps we could just pin down what you think the light bulb moments criteria are. I mean, you mentioned ideas that come in seemingly from nowhere. How else would you define what light bulb moments actually are?
Oh, that's a great question. So, you know, they're different from just a thought in this quality. They seem to come in fully formed,
yeah.
And they seem to come in no time at all. So, for example, when Newton was hit on the head by the apocryphal apple, and it is a bit of an urban myth story, allegedly, he got the whole of the theory of gravity in less than a second, but then it took him the rest of his life to get it all down.
Yes.
And in the context of writing a book, for example, you might get the title of the book and the general theme of it, and you get really, really excited about it. Sometimes they wake you up at night as well, in the middle of the night, and you've just got to get up and write it all down. And what happens is when it's a very full image and you get all the aspects of it, not just the content of the book, but how it's going to affect the readers, how it's going to maybe change your career, how you can run workshops with it, all of that sort of stuff. You get the whole picture of not just the title and the words of the book and the chapters, but what that book is going to do.
Superb. So the light bulb moments, these aha moments, and I'm sure they're described in many other types of ways in other sources, but for now we'll use this terminology, the light bulb moments. Is there anything that holds us back from experiencing light bulb moments? Because I'm sure that many of our listeners will already be thinking of how useful this will be to be able to draw at will on light bulb moments. But before we even go down that road, what perhaps might hold us back from experiencing these light bulb moments?
Again, a very incisive question. Well, there's about six things that will stop you having light bulb moments, and they're centered around the six lower chakras, the idea being that the light bulb moment itself enters through the crown chakra. But if you're if your third eye is very active and you're thinking, so you're actually running a conscious process, maybe an internal dialogue, maybe thinking about what you're going to say next or thinking about what you're doing tomorrow or going over an earlier conversation, the very act of thinking itself will block light bulb moments. And then something else that blocks them is the act of talking, which is centered around the throat chakra. So if I'm talking away at the moment now, if I want to have a light bulb moment, I'll have to pause. Now, I don't need to pause so long as I did there, but that was long enough to let a light bulb moment come in. Then also, as you move down to your heart chakra, if you're not feeling very loved or lovable, or you're maybe in a job where the company doesn't respect what you're doing and your talents, then again that can dampen light bulb moments.
Mm-hmm.
If you're then feeling fearful, if you like, that can also dampen light bulb moments. And moving down to the sacral chakra, if you're feeling insecure or just hungry or in need, then that will block them. And then finally, then if you're rooted, if you find that that you're in a very unstable situation, if you like, then that again can block them. So for light bulb moments to come in clearly, it's necessary that the chakra centers are in balance and not blocked.
Okay, lovely. So for those of our listeners who may not understand and know about chakras, can you give us a brief description, Tom?
Yeah, they're energy centers in the body. You can see them as metaphorical, so they don't exist at all. But if you think about them, when we speak, you might place your hand on your heart, saying my heart's not in this, or you might place your hand on your gut and say, I don't feel good about this. Or if you're worried about what you're going to say, you might you find people that will hold their throat or put their hand over their mouth and things like that. And so these centers are, if you like, centers of energy, centers of activity in our bodies. And again, what's interesting is they're now being detected by scientists, which is kind of interesting. So I love this convergence that's going on right now.
Definitely, definitely. It is wonderful that what the sages and mystics have been talking about and experiencing for eons, really. Science is finally catching up now and is starting to recognize and perceive in various different ways what people have known for a very long time. So it is lovely to see these two coming together, and I'm sure that that's going to happen more and more as time goes on. And talking about two things coming together, I know that a lot of what you teach relates also to the whole concept of whole brain and whole mind thinking.
Mm.
So perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about how you see the mind working, how it works and how it doesn't work, and how that leads into what you call whole brain and whole mind thinking.
Mm. It appears that we've been blessed with two minds, and you know that phrase, I'm in two minds about something, kind of relates to our left brain. The classic theory, or what's entered again into urban myth, is that the left brain is logical and the right brain is creative. But latest research, what you can now do is you can anaesthetize a bit of a brain in a healthy person while they're still awake, and then ask them questions about how they're feeling. Whereas before, most brain research was done on people that maybe suffered some sort of trauma, maybe a stroke or some physical injury to their brain. And what it looks like, if you switch someone's left brain off temporarily, they lose all track of time. And if you switch someone's right brain off, then they become very detailed and focused. Then you can do more detail on that. You can go around to specific areas and switch them on and off. So it looks like our left brain sits inside space and time, and our right brain sits everywhere and everywhere else. But inside our left brain is a complete hologram of the right brain. Inside the right brain, he keeps the hologram of the left brain. They're always intercommunicating. And what it looks like, if you get your left brain and right brain working together, you seem to get to a situation where 1 and 1 equals 3. Whereas if you just stick in the left brain mode, which is where things like internal dialogue and that sort of thing are generated, then you can get bogged down in the detail. If you go into a right brain mode, you could end up with a project, and maybe you have that phrase of people with their head in the clouds, you never get anything done.
Mm.
But when they both work together, then magical things happen. And one of the techniques I use to help with that is mind mapping, which is a whole brain task. So you can imagine when you start doing a mind map, which is, I'll just describe what a mind map is briefly, which is sort of central idea and then branches that come off the central idea with associations. If you like, and these associations could be the chapters in your book, or they could be concepts, or the characters and plots and events and scenes and that sort of thing. What happens is that the left brain gets on with the mapping side of things, and the right brain says, while the left brain's busy, I'll sneak under the radar and I'll do something really creative.
Hmm. Fantastic. So that mind mapping technique, which I know many people have used very successfully for all sorts of different things, including planning books and planning talks and events and what have you, is a powerful whole brain technique. And is that something that you would recommend that writers explore and teach for writers to use?
Yeah, I've got a load of really good mind map templates that I take my clients through that I'm working with. First template relates to the reader, funnily enough. So we map out what the reader would want from the book. Then we do a bit of marketing, so we work out how we're going to get the book out to the market. Then we do some storyboarding. But you can also use them when you get stuck. So, for example, on the 9th chapter of the book on Light Bulb Moments, I got into a block. So what I did was I just put the words light bulb and moment separately on different branches, and I started doing free association from the words light bulb and moment. And if you associate from the phrase light bulb moment, then you'd go to aha moment or eureka or Archimedes or Newton. Whereas if you freely associate around the words light bulb and moment, so from bulb you might go to tulip, and then you might go to Amsterdam. From moment you might go to a moment in time, but also a moment of a lever. And then with light, you go to things like spectrum or light speed or prisms and this sort of stuff. And as I was messing around with the prism bit of the mind map, it made me realize in a light bulb moment that thoughts are very analogous at one level to electromagnetic radiation. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that we could have light that's split into different colors, perhaps we could have thoughts that are different colors or different flavors. And as a result of that, I then wrote a sequel that I wasn't planning to write called Flavors of Thought a month later.
Fantastic. Well, that's a wonderful example of the whole process at work, isn't it? Because you
can
be very creative using these techniques that you're now teaching other people.
Yeah, well, I ended up going through the block on chapter 9 and then writing the rest of the book. And then when I got to the end of the book, I realized that this other book that was burning a hole in my head, maybe quite literally, that just had to come out, and I wrote and published that very quickly. Ironically, I published that before the other book.
Indeed. Well, it just goes to show that the linear sequence doesn't always get a look in when creativity is free reigning here.
For sure.
And that brings up a question that I know that you've covered in events and talks that you've done before, and that is the question about where ideas really come from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking around this now, but let's look at that question. Where do you think ideas do really come from?
Well, you know what I like? I've worked with so many people now that have got different models, and I like to be fairly agnostic in my approach.
Mm.
So a nice agnostic way of looking at it is that they are future memories. They are thoughts and ideas that you're yet to have, and somehow they leap back from the future back to the present. But, you know, I've worked with mediums that have written books where they've been contacting dead celebrities, and I've worked with a lady who contacts the fairies at the bottom of the garden, and people that say they work with angels and archangels. And who am I or you not to prove that these entities don't exist?
Mm.
And you know what? So long as it generates good output, which people want to read and there's a market for, it's largely academic where the ideas come from. So you could say they come from your guides, they can come from intelligences outside the planet or inside the planet but locked in different dimensions. You know, all of these things are theories and conjecture, but the one that I personally prefer is that they come from us, but a version of us in the future.
Mm, interesting, interesting. And then, of course, using this whole brain and whole mind thinking, that approach,
mm-hmm.
then enables you to coordinate the different aspects of your thought process in order to express those thoughts and ideas in the best possible way. Is that a reasonable description?
It is, yeah. So going back to that model, that current model of left and right brain, I've just read this book by a guy called Ian Gilchrist. It's just amazing, called The Master in His Emissary. And that's probably about the most detailed treatise of how left and right brain work right now, which is accessible to the layperson. Is that if you think about it, then if these ideas are future memories, then the right brain is going to be more adept at picking them up. And the left brain, if the left brain is working inside space and time, then the right brain can communicate these across to the left brain. But if your left brain is very active, it will dampen what the right brain is doing. And if your right brain is very active, it will never get across to the left brain. And there's a structure inside the brain called the corpus callosum, which is the connecting strands. And it used to be thought they were the communicator,
mm-hmm.
but they're actually the inhibitor. And what they do is they inhibit one side of the brain so we can get on with something temporarily while the other one doesn't annoy it. And what you've got to do to get into the state where you get light bulb moments is to inhibit the inhibiting process, which you do through meditation and breathing.
Okay, so I was just about to say, let's talk about some more techniques that people can try. And you mentioned mind mapping as being a whole brain task of getting the left and the right brain to work together. I mean, are there any other suggestions that you can share with our listeners today for how you get your left and right brain to work together?
Sure, yeah. Well, as I mentioned just then, breathing is really important. Our neurons don't store any oxygen. And most of us, me including, we breathe very shallowly. So using your full diaphragm when you breathe, which is something obviously you get introduced to in practices like yoga and Tai Chi and Pilates and the like, using your diaphragm is really important. You can also alternate nostril breathe. So if you hold one nostril while you're breathing through the other one, maybe you do seven breaths through the left nostril, then you then close the left nostril off and then do seven breaths through the right nostril. That has the effect of energizing or oxygenating the different sides of the brain. Really good thing to do before any creative writing task. And what I always do every day is I do some form of meditation. So that can be sitting in a chair in it quietly, or it can be just going out for a walk. But I've always got some me time, and what I do is, before I do it, write any chapter, is meditate, then I mind map the chapter, and then I write the chapter. And occasionally, I even draw the chapter. I get a pen and paper and just doodle it, and that seems to activate different centers in the brain and put you into a more creative mode. And I'm not very good at drawing. I don't share these drawings with anybody after I've done them, but they seem to take you into a different area that you maybe wouldn't have got into if you start writing linearly.
I like that idea of doodling for gathering ideas for your chapter as well. That really does give you the permission almost to just free associate, but in a picture image basis rather than in words. So that would immediately draw on the right brain and that free association component of the right brain. So
sure, yeah.
I think that's a really nice idea to get your ideas gathered for your chapter or your article or whatever it is that you're writing. And certainly it's a very important core aspect of all that I teach as well, that some stillness and quiet time, whether it's formal meditation or however, is applied to each individual is really an essential component to get to these deeper levels of creativity and this whole brain thinking that we are talking about now. And would you say that similar techniques are to be used for cultivating these light bulb moments on demand, or are there different or specific techniques that you would suggest for being able to cultivate the right circumstances to have these light bulb moments? Because most people think that these light bulb moments are purely random and that there's no control over them, but that's probably not what you would say.
Yeah, what happens after a while, and this has happened to me, so I can only just describe my experience with all of this. Now, bearing in mind, I come at all of this from an engineering perspective. I've got a degree in electronics, and all of a sudden, I started meditating maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, and I wouldn't call them weird things, but different things started happening to me. And what I found is that I can, with my eyes open now, I can be in the meditative state. And certainly if I'm either creating, so I'm writing, or I'm with a client, when we're talking about their book or their book project, I can be in that meditative state while I appear to be in a non-meditative state. You know, so I'm having a conversation, but at the same time I'm kind of tuning in to the light bulb moments, and I can pick out perfect chapter titles and all that sort of stuff, which is just such fun to have. And there's another thing that happens. If you train yourself to get in eyes open meditation, the speed of time seems to change. And you know, when you're in the zone, you seem to be able to get about 4 hours work done in about an hour. So it's almost like the speed of time changes, the speed of consciousness changes the speed of time, and you get more stuff done. So it's a really practical thing to do. And there's two types of meditation which largely affect this. One is called samatha, where you meditate on the breath, or you meditate on a sound or a candle or something like that. Then there's another state called vipassana, where you meditate on thought itself. And when you do that, our thoughts disappear and they go to zero, and then we're in that perfect state to be creative and to allow the light bulb moments to come in. You almost become like a conduit, if you like, for these future memories. And when I first learned how to do this, it was almost like when I was writing, the book was being, I was reading it as opposed to writing it, and it was being told to me. And so it's an interesting thing to do. I used to get to the point every week where I'd look forward to my writing session. I used to have writing Fridays, and I was so excited to know what would unfold next, because I didn't consciously know what was going to happen.
Fantastic. I'm sure that many writers in their own way will have experienced similar types of scenarios, and it's interesting to hear you describe it in the way that you do. And what comes to me when I listen to your description is that eyes open meditative state is a state of full presence, when you are in complete alignment with all aspects of yourself and you are fully present in the moment, and
Absolutely.
You're not thinking
yeah.
about the past or projecting forwards into the future. You are very much in the present moment, and that is the space out of which, well, the deepest levels of creativity do arise, don't they? So That's a great way of describing it, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, and it needs a lot of trust as well. You know, you're trusting in the process. You're trusting that you're at the right place at the right time, working in exactly the most perfect project, and that you've got the right skills and experience to add value to the information that has been provided.
Yeah, excellent. So if we had then just to sum up maybe a few key steps for our listeners in relation to what we've been discussing, how would you summarize a step-by-step process for people to follow if they wanted to try and be more conscious of triggering and creating the right circumstances to have light bulb moments in their creative writing experience? But actually, as I say that out loud, not just in the writing, because this creative state of being can be applied to all aspects of authorship, including when you're doing a talk or presenting a workshop or whatever it may be. But if you had to sum up just a few key steps for people to take, given what we've just been saying about breath and meditation and so on, what would be your ideal few-step process?
Okay, well, I think the first thing to do is to be working from high intent. So, for example, you know, it might be very nice to write a book that might sell a million copies, but I work from a point of view of what is the book going to do for the people that read it first. And then if as a result of that being delivered, wouldn't it be nice if a million copies got sold or more? Then the next thing to do is to be thinking reader-centrically as well. So when you do the mapping, when you think about your book itself, don't think about the reader and get into their mind. To do that, you can do that by meditation, using the breath. I always mind map every book and every chapter before I do every chapter. It always takes you in a slightly different direction. And you don't need a computer to do that, by the way. Pen and paper is better for doing that sort of work. Making sure you've got me time every day, even if you're not writing every day, meditate or have some sort of quiet time every day. And then most importantly, then when you do sit down to write, I make an appointment with myself in my diary. So I make an appointment with chapter 3 next week, for example. I switch my phones off, I switch email off, I switch Twitter off, I switch all these things off. And then at the very end of it, when chapter 3 is delivered, then celebrate, you know, which for me might be a digestive biscuit and a cup of tea. Or I might go and tweet, I've just done chapter 3 of the next book, you know, and then celebrate and share. And that seems to, again, send a signal out there that you're ready for chapter 4, chapter 5, etc.
Brilliant. Yeah, love it. Love it. That's fantastic. Good. Okay, so any final points that you would like to make, Tom, in terms of the value of this approach and light bulb moments in relation to writing and authorship? Any final bits and pieces of advice or tips or anything else that you feel you'd like to share here?
I think what I'd like to share is that the only way you can get good at doing this stuff is to have a go at it. And if you want to write a book, you know, start with a blog, start with writing articles, start with you know, a small ebook, and just work your way up through it. And if you're writing with the right intent and you're writing good stuff and you trust in the process, then an amazing set of sequences unfolds for you. First is the publisher or publishing route starts to find you. So that whole idea of pitching to publishers kind of disappears. You just bump into the right publisher at the right time or find some way of getting your book published. But also, in trusting in the process and having high intent, then when the book is published, so many wonderful doors open for you, you just wouldn't believe. And then there's one important thing you've got to do when all these wonderful doors open. It's just remember to say thank you for the opportunity, to thank you for the wisdom that's come in.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Lovely, thank you. Wonderful. Well, that's been really interesting speaking with you, Tom, and it's great to hear your approach and how you express and explain all of these things. I certainly would encourage all of our listeners to go to your website at tomevans.co and just check out all of the information that you're offering and your own books that you've written in the way that you've been describing to us. Is there anything else that you would like to point our listeners towards, Tom, in terms of what you're doing and what you've got coming up?
Yeah, I've got a load. There's a Meet Tom section, so you can see where I'm talking if you want to meet me in person. I've got some workshops and talks lined up for autumn. But more importantly, in the download section under free stuff are some lovely audio tracks you can listen to. One's called Getting in the Zone, and it takes you through that nostril breathing technique that I mentioned. One's called Quieting the Mind, that takes you into that vipassanic state of mind. And there's a couple of other lovely ones in there as well that you like. So loads of freebie stuff. And as authors, as every author, I recommend that you give lots of things away freely, and it's amazing what comes back your way as a result.
Definitely. Very, very true. And that is a great intention to have each and every day, I think. So thank you for mentioning that. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Tom, for joining us. Really do appreciate all that you've shared. I'm sure that our listeners will be taking a huge amount of value and interest away from this. And thanks to all of you for listening. I certainly encourage you to take action on what you've heard, because the ideas will only prove themselves for you when you do take action. And as Tom said earlier, just have a go and suspend any disbelief that may be present. Just have a go and see what results you can experience for yourself. And we will look forward to hearing from you. You can always let us know. We'd be delighted to hear about your results. So if you'd like to check out more of the work that we're doing at the IACCW, supporting writers in a holistic and spiritual approach to writing books, you can go to IACCW.com. And thanks again to you, Tom. Thanks to you all for listening. And for now, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye now.